one, anybody want to start with anyone in particular?
Madam Chairman, can I make a couple of comments? I didn't see my job as a scrivener, but more as an organizer.
Yes.
And so please don't worry about things like some places there are sentences and some places they're not. Sometimes it looks like a grocery list and the numbering's wrong and all that kind of stuff, because I did it in chunks. But the idea was just to get them in some kind of order. And so I think, yeah, I just wanted to say that so people didn't look too gingerly about the setup.
Fixing things. Okay. The editor has given us license to dig in. All right.
Can someone remind me what we're going to do with them? It's not as though we don't have many documents that are best practices that we're bound by. So I guess for me to know in what depth, and I apologize for not doing it sooner. I absolutely went on vacation and lost track of all things professional.
Which is a good
thing. I need to know how we're going to use them before I can decide how thoughtful and in depth to be about.
Well, that might be a good place to start. Let's talk about that. We might want to.
I have a thought.
Uh-huh.
If it helps.
All right.
But as we are moving into the process of launching our pilot counties, it is really helpful to have a document that is a multidisciplinary document that we can help, that we can use to help shape process in our pilot counties. And so from my perspective, it would be helpful to have a product from this work group that we can use for that purpose. That's one suggestion.
Well, maybe we ought to flip our agenda items and go to the legislative concept and talk about that first. And that might give us more direction of what we want to do with our final product, because we have discussed, I think, a number of times whether we wanted to suggest legislation, how we could best communicate to the legislature, which is what we're charged with doing. So maybe what we ought to do is go to the legislative draft and decide, you know, what we want to do as far as that, if we want to have that be our, you know, what we get behind and go forward with. Bill isn't here, but he had strongly suggested a pilot program. He said that the legislature really likes those sorts of things. And rather than reinvent the wheel, coming behind this one, even though it has to do with representation, that's been first and foremost, I think, in everything we've done, is that was such a critical thing. So if this is going to be our product, that'll help us, I think, with direction on the other. So let's, if there aren't any objections, let's go to that. You want to take us through it?
I'm sorry?
You want to take us through the pilot program? Proposed legislation?
I certainly can. And I will say that this was not my drafting, just to be clear. I think that it really was a group effort. It was shared. I think most entities. Did you see it, Tori?
First time I saw it was yesterday, or whenever it was emailed.
Interesting. I think.
You see it?
Okay. So. Clearly, there's still room for discussion of the draft, but I know we shared it with DHS and with OJD at the very least. I thought it had also been shared with DOJ, and I apologize.
Yeah, I apologize as well. I thought that I sent it to you, so sorry about that.
Okay.
So So the first portion sets out the problem and the proposed solution, and then there is a section of findings. Following the findings is the purpose, and then the third section is process. And the fourth is appropriations. Given the fact that not everyone has had as much time to review it, I don't know if there are general comments that you wanted to make first, or if you want to review it section by section.
Can I just say I had a general comment? It provides for more attorneys for parents and kids, more judges, and at least up front, that is going to create a need potentially for more DAs in the counties that are prosecuting those cases. Because if there's more judge time and more defense attorney time, you're going to need more prosecutors. And that's the one thing that I see is missing from this document.
They need to be trained.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that's the question, right? Because I think when it says increase resources to DOJ so it can provide additional legal representation to DHS. I mean, I think if it's...
You think it's encompassed in that?
It could be. I mean, if it says full legal representation.
Right.
Because it... I'm sorry. I'm just looking under purpose to see little two. And I read it last night, and so... So when it says increase resources, I think it's kind of a flip because
I think it needs to be clear that it includes that because that was such a big thing for us.
Well, and in the appropriation sections, it does says there is appropriated to the Department of Justice for the biennium beginning July 1, 2015 of the general fund the amount of blank for the purposes of carrying out the provisions of the section.
But if you go back to where Joanne just was on page 3 with the little 2, the wording of that is to provide additional legal representation to DHS child welfare, thereby ensuring caseworkers are represented. The DA never represents, in that context, the caseworkers. So I just think it needs to clarify, not just for caseworker representation, but for litigating the dependency cases.
All parties.
Yeah, all parties, including the state.
They represent if they don't represent the caseworker.
The state.
But what does that mean?
Well, sometimes they're adverse.
Well, and doesn't this, I mean, the way this is drafted presupposes a decision on the bigger underlying elephant in the room about who's representing who at what stages of the game, DOJ or the individual DA's office. And so that's what I'm hearing being raised here.
Right. And it seems, I mean, I know Multnomah County is unique. It seems as though... Because right now, the way that the mechanics are, DOJ, my understanding is DOJ actually gets the resource and then you contract with district attorney's offices,
That's not correct. It's DHS that has the money
DHS
in their
does
own
it.
Budget.
Okay.
And they do a supplement.
So, and that's just for the TBRs?
No, it's just for the...
It's for everything.
Well, no, it's for the jurisdictional work
it's
only.
Right.
Beginning and not... Yeah, and not all counties sign it, and so not all counties take the money.
Right,
but
it's the extra money.
The DA does it up to jurisdiction.
It's a supplemental.
After that, DOJ does it. Some counties, DOJ is doing it from the beginning.
So perhaps the money actually should follow that path and go to DHS for representation.
Well, I think in just the larger context right now, this is a matter that will be before the Ways and Means Subcommittee in September. So there was a note added to the budget bill out of last session that compels both the department and the Department of Justice to present options to the legislature.
And what will the proposal be in September?
That is yet to be determined.
The problem I see with it relates to training and everything, because in a lot of the counties you've got DAs doing this work who've had very little or no training in it, who don't have the disposition for it. They get burned out real quickly. And there's a lot of there's a lot of confusion about the handover, and you know, get DOJ attorneys that get something at TPR that's got serious mistakes at the front end.
Then you have the training component, but you do need the people to be able to go to the hearings for whatever.
And I think that's the problem with this is that it is, like we're saying, the cart before the horse a little bit, and the fact that the issue about who represents or who is best able to represent DHS or the state when they're aligned with DHS at what stage of the proceeding with that legislation that sunsets next June. So that is being addressed separately, and so then that does implicate this, but again, there's no decision made or options laid out yet on the other piece, so it is hard to fine-tune language in here, I think, without having a good sense of what's going to happen on the other end.
Well, it would be easy enough to change C little 1 to just say representation of all parties or something like that that's broader. But if that isn't what the pilot's going to be focused on, then we shouldn't say it either.
I think using something that broad runs the risk of confusion because mm-hmm. technically, for example, CASA is a party, and I'm not sure that we're envisioning something where CASA is going to get state funding to have a lawyer present for each CASA.
If we looked at proposed solution, front page, third paragraph, where it says the components of the pilot program include high quality representation of parents and children, and added, or parents, comma, children, the state, and DHS, would that at least tee up the substantive discussion of what we're doing here? Because it's to me, this isn't it's not clear if this is a drafting error or a substantive decision. And so it doesn't make any sense. I mean, we might as well have the substantive conversation. And then add sufficient judicial resources and get rid of well-advised DHS caseworkers, because that's a component of representation. And if we separate state and DHS, we now have the four entities that are state-funded mm-hmm. representation-wise. And then we figure out, I mean, and then maybe we take away that. Maybe the decision ultimately is that's not what we're talking about here. We're only talking about DOJ, and we're only talking about sort of post-jurisdiction mm-hmm. in this pilot. But I can't, I don't know how to respond to this without knowing what it means, sort of.
Well-advised caseworkers still sounds like somebody's going to tell them what to do and send them in there. What we don't want to have that.
Right. I think that was, I have some concerns with that language. And then about where it says, there's a focus on high quality legal representation to parents and children, but the wording about DHS was different. And, but then there's other parts where it does say ensuring caseworkers are represented. So it's, and I haven't fully had an opportunity to read through this, so I don't.
I like Angela's change. I think that would make it.
But that does.
And I don't know that that's ultimately where we want to land. I just think it raises the question about, is this intended to do that? Or is it intended to do something lesser, which might leave you out, or not? But at least.
Or broader right now and keep everybody in, like you said, and then narrow it. Because what would be our timeline on issuing something like this out of our task force? Do we know?
September is what Bill was recommending.
Well, isn't the Washington project that kind of was the starting point for all of this discussion really did focus on just a limited portion? And it seems like all our discussions have contemplated something beyond that, because you kind of need the rest of it to make it work, or at least to try to see if it works. So.
Well, what if it were two pilot projects? I mean, the Washington pilot project is about parents and children, or it's about parents. Ours is about children. And it's easy to, there's the researches on that, there's a direct funding source for that, There's direct oversight for that. And if our group, that nobody solved this issue of the DA and the AG for, I've been on task forces since, you know, I can't tell you how long. And getting this bogged down in that, I think is problematic. Whereas if you had a high quality representation for children and parents pilot, and you had a high quality representation for the state and DHS pilot, and there was agreement they were going to be in the same counties, then y'all could fight that out without me.
But this is also about the court too, right? Judicial resources.
Oh, I think the judicial resources have to be in it.
And to me, it seems like there's a way to structure it so that everything is accomplished in one piece of legislation, but it leaves open the issue for DHS, DOJ, and district attorneys to figure out the solution, because it really is.
But if you put it, I think it goes back to what started this discussion. If, you know, I hate things that put together and don't consider the system as a whole, because if you all of a sudden flooded the system with resources for judges and parents and children and ignored this issue, then it would create a stopgap, it really would. And it would really affect the pilot, because you would, you know, if you can't schedule these hearings because you don't have DA resources, for example.
And isn't there, I mean, there's already your appropriation for your pilot, correct? For the OPDS pilot, for the parents and children representation. Is it, it's so much now, so much next biennium, or is it just one sum that you're working with now? So this would be to continue that in other counties. So it's not really a new pilot, because you're just about to start it now.
Right, we're launching it for two counties. And I think it seems like we would have, clearly we'll have more information if we can have two small counties and two larger counties. And so that was our hope, was that we could get to four in the next few years, so that we had more information. As it is, we just were really able to do two counties, and they're of smaller size.
So for now, since I think we will have time to make legislative changes on this, and we still have the big question of what is going to be the result of the budget note that DHS and DOJ have, and that should be readily apparent by September, maybe we just do put the addition that Angela suggested, and then somebody else suggested adding some language under little 2 at the top of page 3, and maybe we just add something there that says, and DAs, thereby ensuring that the state's interests are represented. And we just leave it at that for now, and then it's a reminder for us that we need to perhaps tweak that language, or at least it won't get deleted without some thought in the future.
And if it isn't an issue for the pilot, because these particular counties have got it together as far as that issue, then it doesn't interfere with the pilot. And I think that we certainly wouldn't want to derail a pilot over that issue if those counties are doing real well. But it's out there, and so I think we don't want to ignore it either.
Or should it say increase resources to the Department of Justice so that it can provide additional legal representation to DHS child welfare and the state, thereby ensuring
but I think
appropriate
that's the,
representation.
That's the problem. I mean, funds don't, resources don't come.
I understand they don't flow through you right now, but they flow through DHS. And it seems to me like the question might be, is that the appropriate flow? And I recognize
all of the funding for DAs. Child welfare work does not flow through DHS. There's a ton of county money that DAs use for this work, and there was an additional little amount of money that comes through DHS if they sign that memorandum.
Our contract with DHS provides for a certain amount of money to do the upfront dependency work. It doesn't nearly cover the costs that our office pays. Right. Now, DHS this year did open pass-through funding for Title IV-E that we're taking advantage of. I don't know which other counties are. So there's a little additional money, but I don't think that's, even that addition accounts for the amount of money the DA's offices are spending.
No,
Well, you could take out to the Department of Justice, because we don't have to say how they're going to how they're going to flow the funding. It just increased resources, period, you know.
And I guess I would want to ask a clarifying question, and I tend to agree with Angela that this group getting into the weeds on this issue probably isn't the right approach. However, it is curious, if DHS is the one providing district attorneys with the compensation for front-end prosecution, I know we have a statutory provision that indicates that the district attorneys shall represent the state in prosecuting the petition, but when DHS is providing the funding, are you also in a sense, does the IGA contemplate that the district attorney is then representing the agency?
It's clear that
it's clear
doesn't.
That we are
it makes
not
it clear
representing.
That you are not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's written is that it's often that the state's position aligns with the Department of Human Services position. It's often that they both have similar interests moving forward. Taking that into account, the prosecution of the petition, and then it lays it all out.
And so is there a provision in there that talks about what happens when the interests don't align?
Yes.
And what is that? What does it say?
If there's a conflict of interest because there's two parties with different positions, then there has to be a consult with the Attorney General's office, and then we would come in, and as we do, and represent DHS.
And that's where it gets really sticky.
And the state.
No, we represent DHS. Right. Yes, you're right. And then the state would be represented
by... So you would have an DA and an assistant attorney general at the table?
Having different positions.
Yes.
Because sometimes the state's been opposed to filing the petition. That's where you'll see it.
Or sometimes, you know, the state wants to proceed on a petition and DHS doesn't believe there's enough. And sometimes it's the juvenile department that has an issue and they want a kid placed, an OIA kid placed in DHS custody, and DHS says, we're not the appropriate place for this child. And the state was like, well, the juvenile department wants it, so we're going to argue for the juvenile department. So we try, I mean, the goal is not to have those come contested before the court very often. We try and resolve those outside of court.
They
but,
happen
you know,
enough.
Occasionally something pops up where you know, there has to be a decision made. But I do like that. If you take out funding, if you take out through the Department of Justice and instead of additional full legal representation or legal counsel and representation, something like that,
So couldn't you just take out the Department of Justice, just increase resources to DHS, or increase resources to provide additional legal representation to DHS child welfare, comma, ensuring caseworkers are represented?
Well, that's not.
Yeah, I like Neola's. What she had was...
you have to have the state in there. That's
yeah, DHS caseworkers
about.
And...
No, I think I'm not sure we want that approach, because I think that actually complicates the situation further. Because what that suggests is that there would be direct state funding to district attorneys for this work, and that's not what I mean, that doesn't align with current practice, and it complicates it more because there's this whole other discussion going on about how that needs to happen, and so I would resist legislating something that would call for direct general fund to district attorneys for this work.
It also, I mean, wouldn't we have some 4E problems as well?
Yeah, well, only one member of the state. I mean, Department of Human Services is the agency that's entitled to collect that.
We'll receive the federal funding. So
DAs would not be able to do that.
Right, it needs
DHS
to flow through one of either DOJ or DHS.
What if we changed it to read Department of Justice, increase resources to Department of Justice and or Department of Human Services? Because those are the two money sources for those issues.
But we don't get money in the DOJ budget to provide legal representation for anybody. It goes to the state agencies who pay DOJ.
So then should it simply read increased resources for the Department of Human Services for legal representation? If you're not asking for your, because what you're saying is your funding's flowing through them, not through you.
Right.
Well, I figured there was another little squiggle somewhere where some of it came to you. You know, it's sort of
well,
like,
and I think well, when it first came,
and that's true of every department. I mean, the OJD, we compensate them for the legal services. That's the way the legislature does it now with every department. So
it's interesting. I mean, and it does seem like we're kind of playing around with wording. I mean, maybe we just block this out as a placeholder and work on the rest of it. And then if we have more direction in a couple of months from this other group that's meeting about the other issues,
Although, how about if it says increase resources to enable the state and DHS to be adequately represented in dependency cases?
Perfect.
Can you say it one more time?
Yep. Increase resources to enable the state and the Department of Human Services to be adequately represented in dependency cases. Just finesses where the money flows through and how much goes to either one. And we, that's a such a big political issue that...
State and DHS to be appropriately represented?
I said adequately.
Adequately.
Represented in dependency cases.
It's already in there.
Or fully. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's the issue, right? Is it
whatever we're going to use for each of the parties, right. We should use right. Adequately, zealously, competently,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Can we move on to another part of this?
Okay.
I'm afraid to. I bet, you know.
No, go ahead.
Rip the scab off.
We've got a big. We have a big.
We'll recommend that language to the drafting to go back and just mark that, and then they can continue to work on it. And then go ahead, Judge Welch.
Findings. I don't know who wrote these, but they are so mamby-pamby, Nancy. Come on. We got to do better than that. They are so mild. The issue is children don't belong in foster care.
Right.
Foster care is bad. Bad long-term. This is kids belong in a nice, safe, stable family. The people in this room know more than that about what needs to happen. So... it's not so much a matter of maybe even picking what the words ought to be, but just making it
stronger,
much more punchy and taking a position and saying this is bad and we got to do something about it. Glad to help write it, but I don't know if we should sit around here and write it.
Who wrote this? Do we know who did this draft?
I think Bill Taylor started it. I think Amy then worked on it. And then it went to OJD, DHS. And I think an email did go to you, and it probably didn't somehow get to you. Like, uh-huh. I don't know exactly what happened there. But,
oh, okay.
I mean, you know.
We should probably look at the findings in 419B090 and make sure we're not duplicating them.
Yeah.
And maybe we don't need, maybe we just need a finding that has to do with increased compensation for representation for the parties and additional judicial resources in order to get somewhere. But I'm not opposed to yours either, Judge Welch.
I just wanted children don't.
Strong.
The whole idea was of all the law reform was that these periods of time would be shortened, and the reality is they're not.
That's why I was wondering if it was written in a way by someone who knows the legislature and knows that this is what they need to see, and
they're kind of working in that,
if it was written by other people who don't, and we need to change it to make it
right. So Bill Taylor, I mean, I think
that's what
it
I mean.
It may need that broad
right.
piece to start.
Maybe not as a finding. Maybe up in the.
And it, that may be something where we get the assistance. I mean, this obviously has not seen an LC drafter, and an LC drafter will certainly help push the language into the format that it needs to be in. And so maybe one of the things we could do is ask that this be forwarded to LC so that we can actually work with them on appropriate language from the legislative standpoint.
I think I'd start up with the problem thing and say it like it is. I mean, you know, the initial problem is that foster care, lengthy stays in foster care with repeated long waits for parent and changing and all that stuff is not in kids' best interest, and the system being under-resourced is contributing to that problem. It's kind of flip it from I agree. I think it needs to be a little bit more in your face, but we'll see what they.
So I do have some notes on process if we're ready to look at that.
I have another
I have Louder?
Are these on?
I don't know. All right. I have a few notes on process. The section three. On the little A, we'd like to see the department added to that list of entities that would be selecting additional pilot counties.
It does. Sorry, that was probably inadvertent.
And on little C, there's a statement that I think is just a little overly wordy. The as the department deems appropriate, which is line two there, doesn't seem necessary. So I just maybe suggest eliminating that so that it reads, the Department of Justice shall employ attorneys to represent DHS child welfare and shall establish standards and training.
Is the implication of your change that they will, that it's a larger universe of, in other words, that it's in every case or every hearing, or is this simply a wordsmithing issue?
Well, we don't, the Department of Human Services doesn't compel the Department of Justice to employ attorneys. We don't decide who they employ. That's an independent agency.
I really don't like the idea of deciding, well, we're going to have them at one thing, but not at reviews or something like that.
Yeah, I think
either, the attorney's representing them.
I do, and I think this language is, again, kind of goes back to the thought that the funding goes to DOJ to hire the attorneys to then provide work to DHS when it's kind of flipped,
right.
That DHS tells us, and we look at past bieniums to predict future workload and then determine the number of attorneys it takes to meet that workload. So
I just read it as they're the client and they hire you when they want you. Not that.
Right, and we're trying to get away
from
that.
They told you who to hire.
And we're trying to get away that if it's full legal representation or full representation of the agency, then it's going to read differently. But.
And my guess was that that was intended to be deferential to House Bill 4156. But yeah, okay. We're fine with eliminating it.
Is that it on yours?
So just omit those words.
Now, maybe nobody knows in this room, but I sure know there have been periods when, and this has come up with the DAs too, and if it isn't just appearing in court, there are lots of times that the workers or the DHS somewhere in the chain there needs to consult with attorneys at DOJ. They need to prepare for hearings. They need to do all the things that a client normally does with an attorney. Is there pressure to not do that because of budgeting at this point?
Well, I think it's tricky, right? I think every DA's office is different and how they handle prepping for the case and when the caseworker's looped in. After jurisdiction, the Department of Human Services and DOJ, we've worked up criteria for when cases must be staffed with an attorney, should be staffed with an attorney, but there's a lot of discretion with the agency about that. And then, of course, any contested hearing where they need to be represented post-jurisdiction, that's often the AG's office.
Yeah, well, so if...
Depending on...
So, for example, say a caseworker was working on something, like getting a child returned to Mexico, something real complicated legally, would they be free to consult with an attorney in your office?
Yes.
Well, I think, at least in Multnomah County, my understanding is they need either supervisor or branch manager approval. The worker themselves can't just pick up
supervisor approval.
But I just wondered if anybody knows, how bad the pressure is on them to not go because of the money.
I think, and frankly, I think it depends on the branch, because each branch has their own system of care funds that they use for different things. And so I think, depending on who the...
But I'm getting the impression that it really helps if the judge pushes on that.
our office gets calls all the time from caseworkers, and when lawyers come to me, I say, you need to tell that caseworker they're an opposing party, they need to ask their own lawyer.
Right.
They say, and we're not allowed
to. I'm hearing that, too.
But I think there is a reluctance because of budget, because there are some issues that have come up where there have been questions by DHS, and the response is you need to talk to your attorney. That's what they're there for.
Right.
Or they ask the judge right in court.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
really.
That's not as active as the judge is supposed to play a role in cases, inquiring magistrate, right? Uh-huh. That is not the role. And so I think it is. There is a budget pressure or a reluctance because of a perceived pressure. And then also, you know, you've got, there's so much more besides, do I need to consult on this type of case? I'm not quite understanding why we get certain cases where there's an AG there that it doesn't make any sense to have them there, and a similar case the next day won't have one. And then there's all the other things like discovery and all that stuff that needs to happen to keep cases moving forward and flow. And this piecemeal approach does not seem to be cost effective.
Well, and I think there is a lot of variance in the counties, and a lot of it's coming from the judges. Because I, in my county, we almost always, I can't think when we don't have an AG there for them. And that's,
I would love to see a study of the quality, and I don't know how we measure the quality issue of courts in which the same office represents the state throughout the proceeding as compared to ones where it's first this and then that and maybe back to something else on a third time. I just wonder, you know, what are the cases that go to the Court of Appeals and what do they look like? Because I hear consistently from my colleagues that are on appellate courts that the record in so many of these cases just isn't very good.
The interesting thing is those cases are not coming out of Multnomah County, where we have the very odd, we do up front, they do the middle, and we do the TPRs. We have sort of, I think in some ways, the most chopped up system.
Right.
And that's not where those cases are coming from, so.
And I think it really goes again to training, because if you've got a place where you've got a deputy DA or an AG that's working on the cases, that's well trained, that's handling them, that's experienced, mature, great. If you've got a situation where they're being dumped on whoever's available in the DA's office and they're going in and the first words out of their mouth is, I don't know what's going on, then you're really going to have problems later on in the appellate system.
And Lori, I'm not sure that I would, after visiting many counties, I'm not sure that I would describe Multnomah County as the most chunked up, because the reality is in smaller counties where you have a rotating DA, there isn't the consistency, whereas in your office you have enough depth that there is a structure and there is training and there is oversight. And I think that consistency is the piece that's missing in many counties, because you have sort of a revolving door of representation between the time, you know, at the prosecution all the way through until there's actually a termination petition filed.
I think maybe that's what Lori's referring to. The chopped up part is that there's the jurisdictional work, which is done by the jurisdictional DDAs, then we come in and do the middle, and then there's the TPR work that's done by the TPR DDAs, and there's times when the TPR DDAs don't agree with the jurisdictional DDAs, even in the county, not very commonly, but, you know, it does happen, and usually it's with maybe a newer jurisdictional DDA, which is the same that we see.
Right.
But, you know, they have good resources to be able to address that in their office. Others, counties where they've got these same issues on the jurisdictional end, they don't see these cases at the end. They don't have an invested interest potentially in how, you know, they're in there to do their work and job and get it done and move on to the next case because they've got a huge docket. And I think that's the hard part, right? They don't have that depth of training or understanding or knowledge of case law or administrative policy or administrative rule and all those other things, paternity, Hague service, placement of kids in Mexico, you know, all these things that are relevant to the jurisdictional allegations that don't get brought up at the appropriate times because of just the lack of knowledge, maybe.
I will tell you, in my county, they proposed going to a rotating DA system where they would have one DA stay with a case all the way through, and I was upset about that for a variety of reasons, scheduling and everything else. And they did it for about a month, and after a few sessions, all of a sudden, the one guy signed a dependency is back. And they had no idea. It's just like you said, all it took was the chief deputy sitting in on one of those kinds of cases where it was flying from all different directions and it was horrible.
And they want out. And I think that's the perception too, you know, I think it's...
Run away.
It's a perception in some DA's offices that it's, you know, it's where you go out to, it's where you go to start to learn, right? Here's where you get sent. You're on misdemeanor row or you get sent to juvenile and then you go to the real cases, you know, and then you move up. And there's some offices where it's structured as in you have to do your time there and move on. It's a six month rotation. You're in and you're out. Other counties are different. You know, they have people that express an interest and want to be there and have a separate office and it's well established and a lot of senior people. But it's so... it fluctuates so much from county to county.
On process F, no, excuse me, E, I'm puzzled by the wording of that. I'm curious why that's in there. Under purpose little C little 3, increased resources for judicial department for judges and referees in order to adjudicate. But under process, it says, notwithstanding any other provision of the law, which is always, you know, who knows what that's supposed to say. I mean, what that's referring to. Judicial department may employ retired judges or judicial referees. Why does that even, first of all, why is it necessary? But what worries me is that it implies that that's the way to solve the problem, which I think is a political error to word it that way.
You too.
I think it came out of a suggestion at our last meeting that retired judges be used to help alleviate some of the workload. But I,
yeah, but you
but
see
it's
what
not
I mean.
Really need. It's not necessary.
Right. Right.
Because
it's
something that's
right. Yeah.
Can I add something to the next one there? For F, the way this reads, it's that the OJD is really kind of responsible for putting together this annual report to the legislature in consultation with the Office of PDSC and the Department of Justice. And I'm wondering if that should be flipped around to PDSC does it with together with DOJ and OJD and DHS if they want to be involved.
Depends on what you want in the report, too.
or all together. I mean, maybe everyone.
Or all together.
Because mm-hmm. I think we all have a different perspective.
Yeah, the hard thing is you have all the statistics.
But you
DHS got it. Has a lot of statistics.
That's true. But we get all of our statistics from both of those entities
except,
for the most part right now.
Except
for
starting
this
pilot, you could collect the statistics.
What if we put the word together?
Starting to try to collect statistics.
I mean,
you can
track number of court hearings now going forward because of this pilot starting out. Same thing, like if we were involved in some kind of pilot, I think knowing from this point on, this
right.
is how we can
track. So our limitation, I mean, we are going to try to track as much as we can. Our limitation is not having a discrete database that collects this information right now. You know, it's report of attorneys, and so it's less reliable than what we can pull out of Odyssey or what DHS pulls. I think we'll get to a point, hopefully, where we have our own electronic system that we can pull from, but we're not there yet. Anyway, having all of us do it together is probably appropriate, and DHS should have been in that provision as well.
Instead of together with, maybe just Judicial Department, OPDS,
DOJ, DHS,
and DOJ
shall together work submit.
Well, you could also just put it, take it out of the passive voice. There will be an annual report. You just, you know.
That might leave open the question of who is. I mean, at least if we're all on the hook, we know we have to.
Well, it really needs to be a cooperative effort of all the participants, and so what you wanted to do is designate a lead, it sounds like, in there.
The one other thing that I thought of yesterday was under the findings, and actually this, I shared this with a few people, and this was something that jumped out to one of them, and I think I agree. Instead of having that the Judicial Department needs additional judges and referees with juvenile court experience, that the Judicial Department needs additional judges and referees trained and dedicated to be judges in juvenile court.
I'll take the person who's trained and dedicated over there. Experience doesn't necessarily mean you belong there. And it does matter to kids. Maybe it doesn't in Multnomah County, where there's not the expectation, but in my county, they recognize that I am their judge. And that makes a difference to kids, because sometimes that's the only thing that's been consistent. You know, so if we're going to bring Plan Bs in, there's a lot of things they could do to help me out. But I think that identification is important for kids sometimes.
Plan B judges are good to do terminations.
Yes,
by the way.
That's
contested hearings.
Really good,
in small,
really good
small
counties, yeah. Because they come in fresh. I think that's critical.
We have one judge in one family in juvenile court and have for years, but not on the terminations.
Right.
That sort was sort of an internal judgment that was made that it wasn't fair to the parents that they should
right.
get a new.
Well, and I think, you know, judge. The idea that you don't have to come back in and go through all this long, the judge is up on the case, knows about it, knows you, just go, you know. I if I were a parent, I wouldn't have to sit there and have a new judge brought up to speed every single time with my long, dreary, awful history. And
that would be awful.
There. Okay, anything else? All right, so what's the plan on this? You're going to take it back, Nancy, with some of our comments, and they're going to continue to work on it, and then we'll see it in September.
So my recommendation would be that we would incorporate all the changes that were suggested. We'll circulate it to this entire group,
mm-hmm.
and then my guess is that Bill would like to see it forwarded to LC.
Right.
And so if this group is agreeable, what mm-hmm. we'll do is we'll forward all the changes, but then also forward it to LC so we can get it.
And he should look at our changes because, I mean, he's the guy with the experience with the legislature. And so if he says, no, you've really got to say it this way because this is the language they expect, then, you know, we need to be deferential with that, too.
And then maybe we need to play with the early part, like Judge Welch was saying.
Right, strengthen it.
Strengthen the, it's traumatic for children to be, whatever, removed from their families or something like that to kind of grab what the issue is.
Or maybe something, you can put a nasty in there. You can say last year, X number of children were removed from foster care, or X number of children were in foster care longer than whatever, put some stuff in like that, because we've got the horrible statistics if people want them. I was telling somebody the other day, in a county with 30,000 people, if you've got 160 kids in foster care, which is what I've got right now, that's a problem. That's a lot of
160?
160. Yeah, that's a lot of little kids.
The size of your county.
I know. And we work so hard, we get it down to 75, and now we're right back up there. And, that makes people, when you say that in the community, they kind of look at you. I was at a Boys and Girls Club meeting, and the director said there are so many kids that are in foster care, and they look really surprised. Well, how many kids are in foster care? People don't know.
If we're kind of putting some comments forward still, that under findings under H, the wording of that seems kind of... Legislative Assembly finds DHS needs additional resources to better administer Oregon's dependency laws. I mean, they don't really administer the laws. It's kind of worded oddly.
To comply with them.
Yeah, so, right. To fully comply with Oregon's dependency laws.
Or meet the requirements of Oregon's dependency laws or something. This doesn't even get into all the other resources.
I think anyone who wants to wordsmith the sections that are relevant to their entities should wordsmith it the way that it makes the most sense and then send it to Amy.
So if you will you send us the changes that you made?
Yeah.
Give us a little time to send you back some more before you send it on to Bill?
I know Bill's very sensitive to the timeline of trying to get this to LC and get it started down that process. So absolutely, I'll make the changes and get them out to everybody on this committee.
But it would be helpful to know if we need the kind of language that's already in the findings before we, and then to see what else we might supplement with that when it gets sent back. If we could find that out, that would be helpful too.
Well, and I think anyone who has the kinds of statistics that would help support the pilot, if you have them and you have something that you think would be appropriate to include in those findings, I think add, you know, when we send out the draft, add those in. I think they are really helpful. So.
How much, I guess we could ask Bill too, how much does the legislature need to know on that? I mean, there's so many awful stats that you could put in there. Does he think they need a little refresher on that? Or?
Age. That's what I just got finished two sessions of the legislature to get a bill passed, and everybody kept saying, longer than one page.
Don't read it.
Yeah.
So maybe just the one that there's there's so many kids that go into foster care every year, you know. Okay. Anything else on the draft? Now let's go back, and I guess my first question is for Nancy. You indicated that you felt that best practices or these things could support this draft, and I agree with that. How could we get this in a form that could best do that?
I guess I have a statement to make first before that, and part of the legislation required us to put together a collaborative action plan, whatever that is, it's open, that we would all agree to work on within our various entities. So is that what we're seeing this as, kind of the start of that collaborative action plan? And if so, then I think that I've shared this with a few people and for the courts piece, and it was like, whoa, this is a lot of stuff. And some of this is legal. Do we want to have legal requirements included in here? Some of these things don't necessarily need to be in here. Do we want to keep it strictly best practices and things that we'll all strive to do? So I think we need some clarification on that piece.
And boy, do I agree with you, particularly on the court stuff, because there's a lot of stuff in there that is kind of insulting.
Yes.
To the people who might be reading it. And so the question is, you know, do you really need to tell judges, you know, you need to have hearings? I mean,
yes.
Just as an example. Remember, I just collated. Well, if we move from a, you know, a best practice to a collaborative action plan, then we can eliminate stuff that we, you know, that's a best practice, but that we really aren't worried about, or, you know, concerned that people aren't doing, or whatever else.
I thought I saw this, putting everything together in this best practices form, as that step that was going to take us to our final product, because we've kind of been working and trying to organize and cut down, and this was kind of our, let's actually get it in a format we can read a little easier.
Right.
And then what do we do with it now? So.
But it was enlightening to see everything laid out like this specifically by entity, mm-hmm. because it was like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we avoided that when we kept it separated out on those forms. We didn't see what it would really look like when it was all on.
I'm going from this, from one thing to another, but I have a some comments from Megan, who is not able to be here, that she wanted to have brought up at the meeting, and there's some good questions, because it really is kind of saying in a very nice, gentle way, don't you think you ought to be a little bit more specific about some of the stuff that's in here? I'll just read you one thing. Do we recommend a best practice in terms of the frequency of review hearings? 3 months, 6 months? Do we add that any party may request a review hearing? And that is in there somewhere. But it's also in that thing, that the grocery list. That's I'm not so much raising the question as to answer that question, but is that kind of, and that, you know, that would be a good example of something where a best practice probably would be appropriate, consulting or not, Leola, there should be a review by someone at a minimum every X. Or is the law clear enough that that's not really necessary? It's interesting considering where it's coming from.
Right. That's an important question, and maybe we should find that. I don't know.
I think what we see causes statewide is that the lack of review hearings sometimes causes additional delays, because the accountability that happens through a hearing allows everybody to stay on track.
And the practice is all over the map. The Jelly Adoption Group recommended going to 60 days on children who are free for adoption but not in the adoptive resource. And so I implemented that, and that's caused all kinds of hoorah, even though it's only a small number of kids, because going to 60-day reviews really puts the pressure on everybody, and it's expensive. And some places just regularly have the 90, what is it, the permanency, 1 in 90 days, CRB in 6 months, 270 permanency. We went to, we set a 90-day, and we set it either paper or live, and anybody can request it to go live after they get the paper. So that way we're not bringing everybody into court when the thing's moving right along and nobody's concerned. And so the practice just varies all over everywhere.
Did Jelly have a recommendation for children under a certain age to have more frequent review hearings, or am I recalling that from somewhere else?
Oh, I think that's in there too.
It wasn't from one of the Jelly recommendations.
Okay. It was originally part of
this. Was that what it was?
Or that was an impetus or motivation.
Okay.
And some of our courts do have kind of a differential way of doing things based on certain circumstances in the case or the age of children.
Some of them want the kids there for every hearing after jurisdiction, and some of them only want them at the annual permanency. Some of them don't want them at all. You know, there's just a huge variation across.
Paper reviews. I have never understood a paper review, and I hope they don't do them in Multnomah County now. We didn't when I was.
They submit everything they would for a permanency with that. They do a.
I don't have a hearing.
Yeah. Well, if nobody's requesting one.
If there's no issues and no one's requesting, why isn't the kid been returned home? I mean, I don't get it.
Well, there may be, you know, say you're only 90 days out. Mom's in residential treatment, doing everything she needs to do, and everybody's cooperating and moving towards return, there's no reason to haul all those people into court when they're doing what they're supposed to do, but they're not ready to go home. What's the thinking on it? Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. I love reviews. but it becomes a question of how you're going to prioritize them. And so what we did, because we didn't have enough time to do them, is we took the ones where there were people weren't progressing and where there were issues and have hearings on those, and where they're not, we wait for the CRB.
I don't want to belabor this, but are the people represented in these kind of cases?
And see that?
Everybody's represented?
And then they can say if they want a hearing. And I pull them in after I read the reviews very frequently. I'll get it, and I'll say, no, we need a hearing on this. But that way I get a report every 90 days so I can read them.
The challenge is the balance of what you brought up, Judge Welsh, in that if everything is going along, then why have a review? But on the other hand, being on the CASA side and having volunteers that are involved in all aspects of monitoring the case, we'll see that when that review is coming up the week prior is when everything happens.
Right.
So all the referrals are made for the child's therapy, or the referrals finally made for mom to get a drug and alcohol assessment, or whatever that is. We see that all happen within the 10 days prior to the review date that's coming up.
You got to understand, too, this is a small county with the same person reading all these reviews and monitoring the cases. It wouldn't work if you had it someplace where that wasn't true.
And I think most of our CRB folks would say the same thing, that the most action that they see happening on the case is that 3 weeks before the CRB review, after they get notice and prior to sitting there. I think, though, that CASAs can play a really important role in getting, you can request a hearing.
And they do all the time in mine.
In some counties they do, in some counties they never do. So I think that with a training piece for CASAs on when is the appropriate time to request a court hearing and use your power as a party to do that, then they can be making those decisions when they don't see things happening of having a hearing, getting a hearing.
So what would be so bad about saying in here that there should be a review hearing in every case every 90 days, and maybe softening it a little bit to say the standard is 90 review every 90, some kind of actual review every 90 days.
Well, the problem, I think, would be either judicial resources currently. It's also caseworker time spent in court as opposed to being able to work their case. I mean, I hear how a lot of stuff gets done right before a court hearing, but maybe it's also a training issue that not everybody needs to come in so that someone's told to do what they're already ordered to do or told to do. I mean, I think dockets are going to get more crowded. There were times when dockets for me in a certain county would take 3 hours to
but
just sit.
But we're talking about
wait.
A pilot now, dear.
Yeah.
Why can't we put this in a pilot and say this is the way it ought to be done and see what happens?
But is it
rather
really,
than speculate about who's gonna get pinched?
Is it just for the pilot or not? I mean, that's
the thing to me.
Good question.
Yeah, that would be
supportive of the pilot. But I thought our charge is broader than just the pilot.
It's a collaborative, right?
I think our charge, my understanding is our charge is broader. I think that what the pilot does is it gives us the resources to actually implement what we're drafting. And so I think my concern is, you know, I read over this, and I think that in theory, I would like to be charging ahead full steam in every single county, but we just don't have the resources administratively to do that, administratively or on the ground. And so while I love the idea of immediate implementation in every single county in Oregon, realistically, I think that one of the reasons we all kind of rallied around this concept of a pilot is because we recognize that in order to make the kind of change we're talking about, it really does require an investment and then sustained efforts in a particular area, and that's the way to create the change over a longer period of time that will actually take hold. And
doesn't it make sense, though, for us to capitalize on our expertise and having been charged by the legislature to do this, to say these are the best practices, period.
Right.
There are not enough resources to implement them. That's why we need a pilot.
Right.
And so it becomes the historical record that the best practice is reviews at 90 days. I mean, the law says 6 months.
And it hasn't worked, yeah. Right? I mean, that's why we're here, because things take too long. So an obvious thing to do is say, we need to devote our attention to these cases more frequently. I don't know if it's 90 days or what it is. I don't know if you say every 90 days, you know, subject to waiver of the parties, or if you say whatever you say, but it seems like it's the most directly responsive best practice to the delay issue. And I think the other big thing for me is you have to have a lot of smart people on every side and on the bench to get it right in every case. And so,
well, maybe this is going to split into two things, and going back to how we originally structured it, where we had things that didn't cost anything that could be done within existing resources and things that would take money. For a collaborative action agreement, we want to focus on things we can do right now with the resources we have. For the pilots, we want to look at what we could do with the right resources and really do it right.
Or we create the best practices, we fully implement in pilot counties, and we implement
as we can
mm-hmm. in other counties. I mean, right. When I look at this, I have no doubt that we will be spending some time in some counties that aren't a pilot county, but talking about changes we think that could be implemented with existing resources based upon the recommendations. So,
and wouldn't it help us figure out how much to ask for in an appropriation,
yeah.
if we had targeted activities? We knew how much extra judge time it would cost. We knew how much extra JA time it would cost. How much?
Okay, well, it sounds to me like this needs, you know, what Judge Welch did, and she's made it clear over and over again, is she just organized it. She didn't work on wordsmithing it. She didn't work on putting it in a language that, you know, works and everything. That's what needs to be done next. And
I was hoping it would be done by people who were most affected by the ideas.
Yeah. What I would like to do is take the court piece and do, you know, narrow it down based on the discussions I've already had with a handful of people, but then to send it out to all of our juvenile judges.
Right.
Say, this is what we're looking at for kind of the best practices piece,
right.
and get people's input right up front, because I don't want this coming out and not having people have the opportunity to provide some input.
And it might be surprising what they would say needs to be in there and doesn't. So,
will you put 90 days in it?
I will put 90 days.
Madam Chair, may I speak to another component of that? So, Loyola, you brought up the training of CASAs. I think that CASA programs in a majority of the counties are requesting review hearings. In Linn County, for instance, it could take us up to 3 months to get a review hearing scheduled. So our docket is really full, and attorney schedules are really stretched. And so therein lies that challenge of, if it's going to take that long to get a review hearing scheduled, then we may be close to a permanency hearing already, or we may be close. Do you see what I mean? So I think therein also lies the other side of the challenge, which is the restrictions of court time and attorney time, which is some of.
And that's why you got to schedule them at. You've got to schedule them when you take jurisdiction. You set the first review, and you set. Well, we set them all. We set them out for the next year. We set the 90, the, you know, the whole thing. And I've set 30-day reviews on real critical cases. They don't like it, but
I think, you know, a lot of counties don't do review hearings unless parties request it. So you get at the jurisdictional, you get at the dispo, you get the
next
permanency
year,
hearing date, and that's
a year
it.
Out. And that,
but you've got CRB at the six-month mark, and then if someone wants a review hearing before then, they can ask for it. And I think it goes to how much you want the court to be a resource, you know, to handle hearings when there's a contested matter, or to provide oversight on the juvenile case and to bring everyone in and have them report to the court, which I think is a slightly different function than what it currently is in a lot of counties. And every county is different, because, you know, there's a lot of counties that require a lot of court hearings, and you're constantly before them. And then there's a lot of counties that have hardly any, unless someone wants a hearing. And then and they call them all different. You know, I think in Washington County, I think, like, after the plan is changed to adoption, every hearing is considered a permanency hearing, which is an odd, but even if they're every month or every 2 months or every 4 months, they're all considered a permanency hearing for some reason. Lawyers, so I think everyone has their own finessing.
Lawyers don't ask for hearings if they don't, if the judge is going to get mad for the question being asked. And boy, did I learn that doing a Plan B judge. That is the way it works. You have, particularly in smaller communities, the judge is going to say no. Then there's this culture that's created. It's fascinating. I could go on and on for hours about what I learned in those two, in those 5 years. It's just amazing. But lawyers have to think about what the judge, how the judge is going to react, and whether that, if the judge
doesn't
care.
It really is a cultural thing. Yeah. I had, you know, you're talking about causes that don't even ask for review hearings. I just set an expedited permanency based on the request of the CASA to change the plan. Now, that's an educated CASA that knows the difference between them and was able to write a letter to the court saying this is what's going on, and I'm recommending that we set a permanency hearing and look at changing the plan. So the culture is just totally different in different places.
Well, in Multnomah County, when we finish a hearing, be it a dispositional hearing or a review hearing, we set the next day. It could be 30 days, it could be 60 days, it could be 120 days, depending on what's going on in the case. And usually the judicial officer will say, when do you want to come back and review this? But I don't think we ever leave a court hearing without the next date being set.
You wouldn't do it in a criminal case, because then people would fail to appeal.
Absolutely.
And so that's the thinking on it, you know, that, that everybody should always leave knowing when their next hearing is. And with those paper reviews again, or the whether you're having a regular one or not, when we have the hearing coming up, we require that the reports be in within a certain period of time before the hearing. And if they're not in, then we issue a show cause for the worker to show cause why they shouldn't be held in contempt for not abiding with the court order. And boy, did that change everything. We get those reports. We've never had anybody have to appear yet. So there's ways, you know, but, you know, actually getting that ball rolling. It, you know, I could spend all day, every day doing review hearings on these things if I really reviewed them the way I wanted them, because they're magical. People don't start moving. You know, you got some parent that hasn't done anything in 90 days and the clock's just running out. They can be told by their attorney and the judge or and the DHS caseworker if they'll even talk to them and everything, but when they're hauled into court, it makes a big difference.
Megan raised another issue, probably a little bit less likely to stir things up as much. How often should children's attorneys, Angela, see their client? And in other words, asking for a specific standard on that. And is it okay to send someone, for the attorney to send someone in their stead?
So I think that's covered in the Oregon State Bar standard.
Well, but the issue is that it's being asked by the people who don't look at the Oregon State Bar standards. I assume it is.
Well, and I think, you know, when I look at these best practices, I would say, to, with respect to the child and parents, children and parents, basic principles, I would eliminate all three and just say, conform your practice to the Oregon State Bar standards, because they're so much, so comprehensive. And I am somewhat of an outlier on that issue, Judge Welch, because I believe that so much attention has been focused on this issue of seeing your client that the that which slides in the attention of the whole community is filing motions, writing memoranda, doing investigation, you know, go get your own information. Don't sit around and wait for a court report. There's a ton of legal work. That's what I am. That's what I was trained to do, a ton of legal work. I cannot do it effectively, because I'm not doing it in context. I'm doing it for a client. Every one of my clients is different. Everyone has a different interest. I'm not a children's lawyer or a parent's lawyer. I'm a client's lawyer. And so I make those decisions for myself and for the people I supervise individually in every single case. I have some clients that I see all the time, that I talk to on the phone, that I text, that I email. And some clients I see very infrequently. They are
at a point at which they get what I do for them, teenagers, they're not interested in being known as somebody who has a lawyer, has a judge, or has a foster parent. They're interested in somebody who being someone who has a boyfriend and a, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I do what they need legally. And so I don't think it's smart to have one particular party and that particular party's counsel subjected to the kind of inquiry that I know there's a strong feeling among some people ought to happen. I don't answer that question often, and particularly don't do it with teenagers. And sometimes we've had teenagers say, I've never seen my lawyer, and it's not true. But you can't say that's not true. You just have to sit there and conform to your ethical responsibilities and hope that the judicial officer knows your reputation and knows that you're being quiet because it's not true. So that's my soapbox.
I always felt, as when I represented children, I always felt that being in touch with a foster parent is more important than being in touch with a kid. Just in a generalization. That knowing...
It's all of it.
Unless the foster parent's not reliable.
That's you have to have good relationships with the foster parents. You have to have good relationships with DHS. I mean, you have to, but sort of legislating that you should see the client at school or at home or this frequently or that you should report on it to other people, I just don't agree with that. And Nancy knows I don't. Because we
well, and the new representation standards, I was many of those committee, and there's a lot of thought that went into exactly what you're saying, and it's worded really well, I think. I mean, from my perspective, which is only a small part of it, I know, and I haven't represented kids, but well, pro bono in Domrel cases, but not in juvenile court. And it does nice when if you've read it, but it does, I think, take into account what you're saying. There's differences and your client's wishes. You have to take that into account. So I don't know. Maybe the basic principle would be to adhere to the newly revised standards, like really.
And in a weird way, it's tied to those reviews again. Because if you're going to require the children to be present, then it's going to change the contact that the attorney has with them. And that's what did it in our county, too, because we had a training where I brought a bunch of foster kids in, and the attorneys were sitting there. And these kids were no longer represented. They had aged out. They were adults. And they said, you know, one of them said she'd never seen her attorney the entire time, and he was sitting there. And it had a huge impact on everything to hear that, and what do they call it, courthouse advocacy, where you see them right before the thing, and requiring them to come to the hearings, you know, all of a sudden that changed things, because you got to be ready to go, because they know the judge is going to ask them. So, but I like the new standards. I think they really have picked that up.
I will ensure the CASA programs review the new standards. I think that's important for them to have that awareness and understanding. I know that I can only speak from Linn County, and having come from Jackson County, I do have those perspectives. And I hear other CASA directors talk about the challenge of getting to that permanency hearing and an attorney making the recommendation that their clients, when they're representing the child, their wishes are to return home. They don't want to be adopted when their client is 5 or 7 and they haven't seen their client in 9 months. So there's where it becomes a concern, and the question starts to be asked of where is the standard that would protect that from, prevent that from happening, because it's more than likely not accurate. It's not accurate information. So that's where I think some of this is coming from. It's how do you speak to something when you have not done the investigation recently?
Do we need to take a break here? Are we going and get done, or do you want to take a short break?
Get done.
Okay. Yeah, let's keep going. So, all right, let's keep going and get done. So we need to wordsmith it. You've volunteered to do the court sections.
Maybe we all just do our own sections, and
You want everybody to do theirs and then submit it to you to put together a...
Well, I think that's great, but there are some... There's just sort of a broader issue that I've kind of looked at through this, where there are some elements that apply or should apply to all of the sections, but they're not in there. For example, on the timely provision of discovery, that only falls under the DHS section. Well, also attorneys for children and parents should be providing discovery as well. Fair? Okay. And settlement conferences should probably fall under both the AGs and DDAs as well as attorneys for children and parents. That currently only falls under the DHS section.
What was the settlement conference?
Settlement conferences. B, settlement conferences. One, provide discovery well in advance of SC, including witness lists. And we don't prepare witness lists.
In our county, you do.
You do in Multnomah.
Do we in Multnomah County, but that's the only county where we do, correct?
They do in Lane.
Do we in Lane? So Lane, Multnomah County?
Yeah.
It's mixed. It's all over, and they don't have settlement conferences in a lot of counties. So yeah. It's...
Okay. So it's...
That's basic.
It is a little bit all over the place. I guess just on that same point, if we were to look up to A, the timely provision of discovery to court at least 3 hours prior to a shelter hearing... is difficult in counties that don't schedule PM dockets.
Except they bring some of it with them.
Multnomah County has all of theirs in the PM.
But they bring it with them.
But they bring what with them?
DHS brings what they have with them often.
With us, but if it's a 9 a.m. docket, we could provide it to the judge at 6 a.m. or at 5 a.m., but I'm not sure whether the judge would appreciate that.
The discovery's not going to the judge. It should be going to the attorneys, and that's where the issues come.
Which brings up, if we look to courts under subsection A1, parents count or A2, parents counsel appointed no less than 1 hour prior to hearing. So who are we providing discovery to 3 hours prior to the hearing? There were it just seems like there's some inconsistency. That's all I'm trying to highlight in the document, and I wonder whether there's a better way that we can establish some uniform standards.
The lawyers know, at least in mm-hmm. areas that I'm familiar, know they're going to be appointed there. That yep. designated hitter for that firm, they've been told they're going to get a particular case. They don't necessarily get appointed in any kind of official sense.
That's another reason why we recommend a PM docket.
Right. Yeah. That's the other correlating piece is that part of the recommendation is that courts schedule them in the afternoon so that there is time for the lawyer to meet with the client. A 9 a.m. shelter really does cause problems from the representation.
It's interesting too. I mean, PM, I agree totally for all those reasons, but then it's also hard when you get 4 p.m. shelters because they go 2 hours, and then you've got everybody, you know, some counties, which we've been doing them in more recently, where we're handling them all, and they start at 4 and go till 6:30, and then it's, you know, the attorney has a commute or whatever, you know, they're not getting home on, and you never know if you're going to have a shelter or not, so it's almost, I mean, PM, yes, but maybe with the...
A little earlier.
and then you're really micromanaging the court docket, which in some small counties they do in custodies at a certain time, so all the sheriffs are busy trying to get the in custodies heard at 1:30 or 1, so then they move shelters after that, and so yeah, it's all hard to indicate, but I guess it's a best practice, it's not a directive, I suppose.
I was wondering whether or not it makes more sense and to include just a standardized list of best practices for all participants in the system rather than breaking it down by individual roles and responsibilities.
Well, I think there's going to be some that will be global, and kind of the discussions I recall we've had over these months is that there are some pretty obvious things that we all have a responsibility for everybody who's represented. But then there are additional things that are related to each interest or entity. And so perhaps the
next version of what comes out of everybody's edits could have some bigger bullet points or narrative with whatever, you know, settlement conferences or discovery or something, whatever the global issue is between all of us, have that at the top, and then we go through.
Or just repeat. In other words, you're working on Area X, put it all in there so that people who do Area X work have a document that applies to them, that, but it also includes the other. I mean, it's just sort of a style issue. Really.
Well, maybe a good way to do that is on the first one, the one that says courts on the top, it's immediately broken into different these areas. If you put in one that was, you know, the whole thing, and then broke it into the specific areas, you could move some things into that that apply to everybody.
And I think Chris is just coming in today, and Lois has been here, where we had a big mushy one, and then we've actually now pulled it apart. So there was one that was all together, and everyone has just...
And I apologize.
He didn't know that. So, yeah. But I get what you're saying. I like what Judge Love is saying, too. We have the provisions that apply to all of us generally, and then the... or repeat them within each one. But have that set language we just cut and paste into each person.
Let's set some deadlines. The second one, the one that has each section, what I would suggest is that we're each primarily responsible for our area, and but you can make edits on any of them that you want because, you know, we've all been dealing with this. And if they submit them by a deadline to you, do you think you can get it into one document? Or do you just want to
But do we want to do our own first without editing other people's? Because I don't know what CASA might take out or change in theirs, and I don't want to edit it.
Okay.
So let's if we do our own first and then...
Look at it, and then we can, at the next meeting, we can decide if there's issues.
So if you see something that's glaringly missing that I took out of the court section, then you can comment on it, and we can go from there.
Okay. So, and there are some things here where we don't have some of these areas like Citizens Review Board. We need to figure out who's going to do those.
I can do that one.
Yeah. Okay. So everybody take their area, and... Let's set a deadline to get it to Leola. What would be reasonable, do you think? You know, the sooner the better. Our next meeting is the 12th of September.
We're not meeting in August.
No, because we're on an every month schedule. So if we had it by Eyes of a Child is in mid-August, which is why we're...
10th and 11th.
On it before or after Eyes of a Child, I guess is what I'm thinking. That's right, exactly in a month.
Would it be okay if we tried to get everything together by the 8th of August? It's like 3 weeks out.
Send it to you by the 8th?
Yeah, and I'll just... cut and paste them all into one document and send it back out to you.
Okay. And is the, so we're not doing this later maybe, is the goal to write sentences or is the goal to just hit blurbs?
Let's try to get it nicer.
But like a sentence.
As much as you can.
So make it look as professional, final product sentences. Okay.
And I think we should use the same deadline on the LC draft.
Right.
August 8th.
And then, is there anything else we need on either of those two?
Madam Chairman, I'm sorry, but there is an issue. I did throw one issue. I threw something in there. Nobody's called me on it. that is very near and dear to my heart that I have worked for all my professional life trying to fix and got a little better in Multnomah County over the years, and that's the issue of service on parents. I think that it is a mistake that DHS is responsible for that because they don't really understand what is required legally, and most of the people in this room probably don't either, because they don't haven't practiced, done private practice where the standards for service are so different than what is used by DHS. It is, in my opinion, if that problem could be addressed, and it will cost money for OJD or the DAs to do this, it will probably have more impact than anything else that could be done.
You put on here service by publication. Are you talking about all forms of service, or just
particularly service by publication? Yeah.
Are counties doing that on dependencies? Because Multnomah County is not.
Well, they should be, dearie.
Sometimes that's the only way.
Sometimes.
There's the provision that says that you can use alternate service, which I think a lot of DA's offices rely on heavily because of the timelines, and it's quick and easy. But yeah, there are counties that do it by publication. There's also a statute that says the county should bear the cost of any service, which is another stickler because counties don't have money. And so that's always been something that raises up and goes away.
All I'm asking at this point is that it not be left off the list, and however you two want to address it.
Yeah, we can play with language for sure.
Yeah. But there needs to be a task force on that subject, probably. Or
so you're saying you would notice if we deleted that, right?
Pardon me?
You're saying you would notice if we deleted it.
You know, I agree that's an important issue, and we really haven't talked about it that I can recall at all during the meetings. And it delays things unbelievably.
Especially with that new Court of Appeals case.
Yeah.
And these are the delays that I'm saying you need to talk to your attorney about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is coming up where I think it will save everybody money that they're worried about spending in the long run if there's that proper legal advice and eye on everything from the outset. Mm-hmm. And this is a struggle that keeps going on.
And we're already seeing a real struggle on how you're going to do that because of that court case about the disposition. Mm-hmm. You know, what are you going to do when you just never even found the other person? What does that mean?
Or
you just found him and Mom's ready to go, and you just got Dad served.
I think that's an issue when it comes to the multidisciplinary training, that it would be helpful to have a module that is focused exclusively on that issue, because as I've talked to various court systems, it really is a... There are wide differences in practices, and some courts really have always considered jurisdiction as being established only when you have both parents, and other jurisdictions have barely clung to this practice of considering jurisdiction established when it's just one parent. And those jurisdictions, I think, are really intimidated, and it would be very helpful for a multidisciplinary group to work through that issue.
Well, there are just all kinds of issues. I know how to serve somebody in Mexico. I imagine a lot of people don't. But there is a way to do it, and there's a way to do it fairly expeditiously. But you've got to know how.
I thought you just call that guy in Seattle and pay him a lot of money.
Yeah, you go through the consulate. That's exactly right. And there's a particular process that they use, and what the papers look like, and what you have to have translated. And you, once you know how to do it, you can do it. But
you say expeditiously. It's taking us at least 6 months.
It's about five to six months.
Yeah, it takes a while. It just depends. Because we've got a consulate in Boise now, and so that moved our time. That really helped us because we can go faster. But yeah, it's expeditiously in terms of Mexican time. It's fun. Shouldn't take 2 years.
Yeah, that's true.
But okay, well, maybe what we ought to do is just keep that. If you've got any service issues, let's make sure that we keep that in mind and maybe put that as an agenda item on next time to talk about it, since we haven't before. So pick that up. And then the other thing that we had on our agenda is who we want at the September 15th meeting. And any thoughts on that?
And at the last meeting, Bill Taylor mentioned to folks that there are several legislators and Justice Brewer and a few judges who are meeting and talking about juvenile dependency, and Bill suggested that we might want to see if any of them might want to be at the next, at the September meeting, mm-hmm. to let them know what we're doing, to get their support, and maybe figure out what their priorities are, what they're talking about.
I think we better do that, because we don't want to come up with something isolated from or in conflict with something somebody else is doing. Now, does he know who he would invite?
Yes, that group has been, that group has met once, and I think they have another meeting that they're trying to get scheduled, and I think it would be to invite the members of that group.
All of them.
There were three or four legislators and three or four judges.
Whether they'd all be able to come, I don't know. Yeah. We tasked Bill with doing that, do you think?
I would be happy to work with you, Leola. I think that, and we can talk with Bill, and I don't know if other people are interested as well in collaborating, but we'd be happy to do some of the reach out to make sure that we get people there.
I have the drafts at this, at that point, so that'd be a good time.
And are we, again, back to the issue of the purpose, are we inviting them to talk to us, or are we inviting them to listen to us talk?
I think both.
Well, I think we should know. We have 2 hours. They're very busy, important people.
I think so. My impression is that it is both, and that and part of the important piece of it is for them to know what we've been talking about and what we'd like to see moving forward, so that we're starting to build some legislative support for the idea of a pilot.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we start at 9 and invite them to come at 10 and go allow 10 to noon for us, you know, that would give us a chance to talk to them, them to talk to us. Does that sound like a plan?
Fine to me.
But it would give us an hour before they got here if we need to pull things together before. And is somebody going to take care of adding Lois's thing about the Oregon safety model and where it needed to be at? You'll do that. All right, anything else we need for today? I'm excited we're starting to get some stuff going on. That's pretty good. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hopefully next time you'll have Lewis instead of me.
You do help with our